Today is part one of our two-part special celebrating RPG A Day 2022.
Welcome to Passive Aggressive Perception, the system agnostic TTRPG podcast, where we ask more questions than we provide answers.
I'm Ivan, and this is the Guinevar to my Dritz Doorden. Welcome to Menzo Berenzon. Steve.
Yep.
I'm a big Dritz book fan, as many people who know me in real life and probably listen to the show would know. Yeah, you got the cool one, man. I'm just like some drow, and you got to be the badass extra planar shadow cat from hell, bro.
Yep.
Fair enough. It's actually pretty apt that we're using D&D references this early because we do have some TTRPG news. And I think first and foremost, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that the new Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves trailer has just recently dropped. We just watched it. And honestly, I'm like surprised that it didn't look as crappy as I thought it was going to look.
Yeah, I mean, it is clearly pretty big budget, and they have some like actual names tied to it. Not that they didn't have a few names tied to the last time they tried this.
I know.
We were just looking. In the meantime, like CGI and stuff happened, so like that's.
I know. We were just looking, and I think the last big one, or the last like I think the biggest one was in 2000. It had Jeremy Irons in it. Jeremy Irons is a badass.
It's the Marlon Wayans one. Right? He was in it too. Yeah,
But yeah, I mean, I think that you hit the point there. It's big budget. And I think that these movies have always had the potential to be good. And I think it's just with the renaissance of RPGs and just the explosion, especially since the COVID lockdowns, that like finally people have taken enough notice to dump a whole ton of dollars behind it.
If I may troll, I would love if this were like a huge hit and then like people were like, why isn't Critical Role this awesome? And then Matt Mercer was like, fuck, I got Mercer.
Matt Mercer himself gets Mercer effect. God,
yeah, people
damn
are
it.
Like, why don't you have CGI dragons? And he's like, this is what it's like for everyone else.
I know, those guys aren't even allowed to make money without people complaining about it. Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, the vibe was, it was interesting. It's going to be interesting after this comes out, which, by the way, is March 3rd, 2023, to see how our reaction to it then compares to our reaction to it now. But I was like really kind of blown back that they went with that whole kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy vibe. It's supposed to be like fun and playful and kind of like bard centric and not like grimdark, serious, hardcore. You know what I mean?
I mean, it kind of matches 5e.
I was going to say,
5e is not grimdark.
Talking about TTRPG parties, too. It's like 1% seriousness and 99% fart jokes most of the time. So I guess that tracks. Moving on, a little bit more of D&D news, actually. It looks like Planescape was just teased in the new Unearthed Arcana. And what this means is that they introduced the Glitchling, which is a new playable race into the Unearthed Arcana. And Jeremy Crawford, who's a Wizards of the Coast game design architect, is quoted as having said that the Glitchling is a, quote, cousin or perhaps a sibling to a rogue Modron, which is an immortal being associated with the Planescape setting. For those that don't know, Planescape is a game setting for D&D that kind of allows you to freely travel between various planes of existence via magical portals and stuff. And it ties in a bunch of the other kind of worlds and campaign settings and planes of D&D. It's very beloved, and we haven't heard much from it for a very long time.
Yeah, it's not so much a setting so much as just the settings.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like if you want to mix and match some settings, like, here's, I guess, like official green light to do that.
Yeah, but exactly.
It's been around.
Mm-hmm. Especially considering we've gotten Spelljammer recently, too. So like D&D fans, especially old timers that are like big fans of these kind of like less than Forgotten Realms. I don't want to say less than, but less popular than Forgotten Realms settings.
The actual Forgotten Realms.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The realms that have been forgotten by wizards.
I think Spelljammer coming back is, and now this makes a ton of sense. Like,
yeah,
you
totally
know, them kind of being like, well, here's a literal way for you to get around to them.
Yes.
These spaceships again.
True facts. It's pretty exciting. Moving on to our last piece of TTRPG news. For those that are looking for some good digital content, they've been waiting for a good sale to buy some new stuff. DriveThruRPG is currently doing their Christmas in July, and from the time of airing, it's going to last for about another 6 days. So I would get in there and get in on some of those good deals. Just Google it. You'll find it. No problem. Also, similarly, if you would like to get some sweet Drive-Thru RPG gear. We do have affiliate links, not only on our Dusty Stack page, but also on our About Me page. So if you're looking for a completely no extra cost to you way to support the show because you like what we're doing and you would like to help us continue doing it, use those affiliate links, get you some sweet digital gear, and then let us know what you got. So moving on to the actual subject matter of the day. This is kind of a special episode. We've never done something like this before, but I am pretty excited to do it. There is something called RPG A Day that happens every year as of how long now?
I think this is the ninth one.
The ninth?
One of the questions is, what should they do for their 10th anniversary?
Cool. I'm going to let you handle this, actually, because you know way more about it than I do. Why don't we explain just a little bit what RPG A Day is?
So, essentially, like RPG A Day, now in its ninth year, it's essentially a hashtag. This comes from Autocratic. That's the blog that promotes this, and again, it's a hashtag, so you can find hashtag RPG A Day 2022 for the questions. Basically, in the month of August, every day there's a new question related to GMing and playing and the hobby in a general sense and how you got started, et cetera, et cetera. A few of the questions are kind of non-questions because they're basically just kind of tagging other people to
right,
do it.
Yeah.
So rather than us go through it one day at a time on social media or whatever, we figured why not just kind of continue a little bit of our AMA 50th episode where you got to know us a little bit by just jamming the first half of this in one episode and the other half in another episode and just kind of giving you a little insight into us and some things about us gaming. And I think this is a cool way to do it. And so we'll start it basically at the end of July and hop into August.
Yeah, it's kind of like Inktober in the way that like every day you're supposed to be inspired to draw something new for the entire month of October. Mm-hmm. This goes for like the entire month of August. So like you said, we're starting it at the end of July and we're going to be bleeding into August. This is going to be a 2-episode special. I'm pretty excited about it. So again, you sent me this tweet by David F. Chapman. And one more time, that's at Autocratic, AUTOCRATIK. Definitely follow them on Twitter. Apparently this fella is responsible for getting this started. And I think it's a really cool thing. So without wasting too much more time talking about what it is, I feel like we should jump right in because these are a very digestible list of simple questions. And my hope is that you'll hear our answers to these, have your own answers. You'll either be inspired to do this on your own social channels or you'll write us in, let us know what you think. But I want this to kind of be a two-way conversation because some of these are subjective. I would say most of these are very subjective and we're interested in hearing about your answers.
You know, we're going to go over the socials at the end, but I think we could definitely participate in this on our Twitter account so that we can kind of have an individual post each day.
Yeah.
And we can harken back to what our answers were and maybe people can engage us and give if they're not doing it on their own social medias, they can write our coattails and give us their answers to whatever the question of the day is.
So why don't we go ahead and jump into question number one? I will ask this to you first, bud, but question number one for RPG A Day 2022 is, who would you like to introduce to RPGs?
Okay, so I have a friend named Adam who is not much of a gamer. They play some board games. He's a big fan of Cards Against Humanity for what that's worth. But every time I've ever tried to recruit him, considering that a ton of our mutual friends play tabletop games, he acts like I've asked him if he would like to get slapped in the face by me, despite my very reasonable requests and the fact that he has a great sense of humor and is a very creative guy and does some really cool digital art that makes me think that he would be a great fit for this kind of creative expression. So I'm trying to find ways to figure out what nerd culture stuff we have in common that I continue to kind of reel him in.
Right.
And perhaps get a few of our mutual friends to the same table and for some baby steps. Dude, so Adam, I'm coming for you.
It's a hard sell, man, especially people that kind of aren't involved in like the overall geek community already that understand that like those barriers and stigmas are already being torn down a little bit. Like it's to some people you say, hey, would you like to sit around and play Dungeons and Dragons? And they're like,
What are you, some kind of fucking nerd?
Yeah.
It's tough.
Because people either ask nowadays or they're just not interested.
Yeah, right.
And I would like to bang my head against the wall by asking one person who is not asking me. You know, I mean, I definitely have some people who have asked kind of surface level about the hobby, but they're all already kind of on the hook. And all I have to do is kind of like find the right game or find when we have coinciding schedules. But Adam is my tough nut to crack because I know in my heart of hearts that he will love it.
Yep.
Just actually getting
them to do it.
Getting them involved.
So if you've ever had an experience like this, definitely let us know. You've been desperately trying to convince somebody and have not been able to.
Yes, I do not want to trick him into it. But if that's what it takes. So I'm going to... I will update you one day down the line when we finally do a one-shot or something, and it turns out he loves it, and then I will be right. God damn it. So, Ivan.
Yeah.
Who would you like to introduce to RPGs?
Any member of my family. So this kind of goes back to what I was just saying, that I feel like there's a pretty hard dichotomy between people that I play RPGs with and then people that I would be friends with, completely separate of RPGs.
Yep.
And it's not that like people I play RPGs with aren't still my friends, and it's not like my other friends are less friends because they don't play RPGs, but there's like a big divide there.
The Venn diagrams of these of these hobbies,
they're not even touching.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's really strange. And so like I've never had like a significant other or like a family member that's ever like gotten it. Like a couple people, bless their souls, have tried and they've sat in for sessions before they got like too bored or ADD or had to get up and do whatever. But I've never been in a situation where it's something that I share with like the people closest to me that I would call like family. You know what I mean? So literally any member of my family would be great to kind of get those circles of the Venn diagram touching. Because it's like I said, man, it's hard. It's a hard sell sometimes. I still get looked at like I'm like a fucking weirdo because I'm into this hobby, even though I'm in my 30s now. And it's not like I'm like a kid, but I mean, you still get those reactions from people.
Mm-hmm. You will get a bunch of answers from me over the course of this episode about my relationship with my younger brother and gaming, because it's been inextricably tied. But definitely no one else in my family is interested in the hobby. My dad has engaged in like a few board games and card games just to kind of be like, what are you guys doing over the years? Mm-hmm. He also, and my parents, God bless their hearts, both are casual Star Wars fans
who will
watch the show and then ask me and my brother unlimited awesome questions that I love to answer. That is not a burden at all. It's like a weird awesomeness. But that is a bridge too far.
Yeah.
So my parents will never understand the beauty of casting spells unless there's something or not tell me.
I got my dad to play Takenoko, which is just kind of like a cool little East Asian inspired board game where you stack bamboo and it's very relaxing and very nice. That's the farthest I've ever gotten him. He did enjoy that and he whooped my ass and he will never let me live that down. The one board game he ever played, he whooped my ass.
And you absolutely did not let him win. I guarantee.
Nope. No way.
No way is Ivan letting you win when he introduces you to a board game.
All right. So question number two, Steve, what is a great introductory RPG?
5e.
5e, it is. And I can, may I venture a guess as to why you said this?
Go for it.
Because it has cultural context and it's much easier to grasp.
I think it's a pretty simple game because it's been, you know, hacked apart and put back together and play tested. And it has huge backing and huge, support and writers. And it's something in the zeitgeist for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And the newest edition is meant to be accessible.
Right.
I mean, I don't hate that 5e is a great beginning game. I mean, I think the Mines of Phandelver is going to resonate as one of the better intro adventures ever.
Hell of a box set,
You know, and I mean, I would say before 5e, my answer is West End Games of Star Wars. It's a D6 pool game.
Yeah. Talk about cultural context.
It's Star Wars. It's very straightforward. It's a IP that people understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fairly basic game because of it being a D6 dice pool. It doesn't even involve, you know, weirdo dice to people who have never played before. Mm-hmm. You just got your D6s, take them out of your goddamn Yahtzee box and let's do it.
Right.
You know, so before 5e, I would say West End Star Wars because of a lot of factors, including the fact that it's just a very simple D6 dice pool.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, when that game came out, you were Rebels fighting the Empire, and that's all you had to worry about because, exactly. you know, the game was basically built around the concept of pretty much the original trilogy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I appreciate 5e for what it is, and that's straightforward and, you know, pretty simple, and you can play out of the player's handbook, and they have a great box set.
Yeah, and people will always be able to get it. Like, everybody understands, like, that fantasy archetype of Wizards and Dragons and shit, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's easy to grab.
The touchstones are very appropriate and easy to grasp. Ivan, what is a great introductory RPG?
Yeah, this is... So my number one is something that I played recently and I already talked about, so I won't go too in-depth on it, but Dread. Dread is fantastic. I would say it's a good introductory RPG if you're willing to deal with sensitive subject matter like horror and anxiety and stuff like that. If not, just change it to something else, and the mechanics work just as well. The reason I say this is because it's completely abstracted away all of the grindy, crunchy work from a GM and the players. It's literally the mechanic is draw a Jenga block and don't knock it over. I'm sorry, non-Jenga stacking blocks.
Non-trademark stacking blocks.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's incredibly good just because it really plays up on the improv experience. It really plays up on the role play experience. Have a good time and don't worry if you're looking silly. And the rules are easy enough that you can teach them to somebody in 2.5 minutes.
I think one thing that also makes a great case for that is it's designed as a one session thing. This is not, this is, you don't have to get people bought into background, to campaigns, to even playing a second ass time. Give me one block of time and I'll give you the basics of role playing.
Yeah.
And that has super a lot of value.
I do have a secondary answer to this as well. Mm-hmm. And it's Dungeon Crawl Classics. For all the same reasons that you said about D&D, that it has cultural context, it's easy, it's fantasy. It's also very demonstrative of rules light and rulings over rules. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to just throw people into a quick dungeon, say, you're exploring the dungeon, give them some gear, tell them how dice work, and then just leave everything else to rulings for the GM. And it's a very quick gateway to just do something fun and easily digestible.
Yeah, being able to lean on, and we talked about this plenty, potential passive-aggressive perception bingo card entry is, you know, like you can lean on the tropes in a good way with DCC.
Definitely, yep, 100%.
You know, there's value in that.
Yeah, and if you're not into fantasy, it has something to accommodate everybody. There's mutants, there's fantasy, there's whatever. You can translate it to anything.
Yeah, whatever letter crawl classics.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly.
Crawl classics.
All right, number three, Steve. When were you first introduced to RPGs?
I, with my younger brother and a good friend of ours, kind of stumbled across West End Games Star Wars in middle school when none of us had any real concept of role playing. We were all Star Wars fans. We found out about a game.
Cool.
With Star Wars as the point of it. And my friend, she was also a storyteller, writer. And so the idea of being able to kind of tell our own version of like a Star Wars movie was incredibly interesting to someone who was kind of like too old for the Kenner toys and maybe like running around and playing Luke and Leia.
Never too old for the Kenner toys.
Right, exactly. Well, but if you want to take them out of the package.
Yeah, exactly.
We're right in between the age of taking them out of the package and having a brain hemorrhage over taking them out of the package.
Right.
So the idea that, you know, we could tell our own stories and that like there was kind of a framework for it instead of just like probably younger kids just running around saying, like you didn't. That shot didn't hit me.
Totally.
And then soon after that, a group of us in kind of like whatever, like gifted and talented thing in middle school got our hands on, I think, like some AD&D level Dungeons and Dragons, like TSR
sick.
Back in the day That's era, sick. Where we kind of tried to figure out what we were doing. This led to the group that eventually we got into like GURPS and Shadowrun and really played. But for a year or two, like we just kind of read the books and like didn't even attempt it because we truly didn't know what we were doing, but it made us want to figure it out.
I like that you said GURPS too, because I feel like GURPS has become so many other things. It's kind of like the seed from which a mighty tree grew with many branches.
Yeah, we definitely read some books. Like I remember like reading some Palladium books and just like they're like size 3 font books where you're just like, there's so much stuff in here. And we didn't have like a framework. So it just was like every bit of it was information overload.
Oh yeah.
And that like literally like Thaco, like is blowing up your brain.
Thacko.
Like your middle school brain trying to process Thacko is just like, you're just done for.
Someday I will describe exactly what Thacko is, but I don't want to do it today.
But we didn't, none of us really had like an older sibling that we could be like, can I play? You know, like we were the older siblings and none of us knew what we were doing. And that was like us being like, oh, God, man, like somebody please figure this out. Somebody be a GM like enough to drag us through Mountain Dew fueled weekend sessions so we can figure this out.
I think a lot of people could benefit from reading GURPS, though, just because, again, because it has informed so much of RPGs today. But it also has a lot of, like, that was one of the first things that really dove deep into like the crunch and minutiae and like offered you things that you're like, why isn't there a rule for this? Like every little weird thing that you could think of, it was like accounted for.
Well, I mean, the idea, well, I mean, I think it literally stands for generic universal role playing system. The point was, is that like it can be anything to anyone, and it could be of 60 books about 60 different settings, but it also could just be the core rule book, and you take it wherever you want, but it starts with a very reasonable baseline, and that's what I appreciated about that game.
Yeah, so when I was first introduced to RPGs, I'm going to kind of amend my last answer on the Getting to Know Us episode a little bit, because it's a vague question, and I didn't want to deep dive too much into that episode, but I'll do a little bit more in this episode.
Yes.
My first exposure to RPGs was probably JRPGs, so NES and SNES era JRPGs. I was obsessed with them. My first real exposure to role-playing was early days of the internet forums and chat rooms. So literally pretending you're like a Dragon Ball Z character or pretending you're a wizard and then just doing turn-based combat in a forum. Eventually that evolved into chat rooms where you would have like whoever could type the fastest won the battle, basically. That was a lot of fun. That was my first real exposure to that. I don't know if that qualifies, but it definitely was my very, very beginnings of role playing. From there, I already mentioned this in the Getting to Know Us episode. I had a sister who had older friends, and they exposed me to World of Darkness stuff, and it kind of sprung out of there. When it was, oh golly, I don't know. When I was doing the chat rooms, I was definitely a tween or younger, and then after that was probably, I don't know, 13, maybe something like that.
Probably so. Middle school region.
Yeah, yeah. If you want that whole story, definitely go back and listen to our Getting to Know Us episode. I believe it's episode 50. There's a lot of good and useful information in there and a lot of good conversation starters.
Oh, we'll give you the socials later and you can demand that we do an entire episode on Aiden's full deep dive of his complete middle school role-playing experience.
It's so nerdy, and it's like, I'm still a little embarrassed because chat rooms, I know how chat rooms are seen now, and they're like not cool at all.
Well,
like,
I feel like this kind of question is like a poker bad beat story or like a lose your virginity story. Like, it's never going to be interesting not awful or uncomfortable and weird.
And it's always super complicated. Like, do you count things like being obsessed with Tolkien and playing like cops and robbers in the backyard something? Or like,
I mean, choose your own adventure in a car in a summer vacation.
Totally. And I mean, I was reading Dragonlance before I even did any of this shit.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So like, I had exposure to like Kryn and Dragonlance campaign setting before I even knew what D&D was.
I mean, I actually like that these questions are a little bit vague, like literally number four. I want to parse this when we get to it, because I think some of these are like, they're open to interpretation enough that you can kind of like answer in a way that just kind of gives people some insight, no matter way you're answering the question.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So for example, question four is, where would you host a first game? So my question is, I assume this means a first game experience for a new player, or does this mean the start of a campaign? I think it means, where would you host a game for someone playing their first game?
That's exactly how I interpreted it. And I just want to quick cut you off to say, go listen to our episode on shepherding new players. I think it's a really good episode, and it deals with a lot of these things that I imagine we're going to kind of reiterate here a little bit.
Okay. You didn't cut me off. I let you cut me off. You can't fire me because I quit.
Fair enough. So, sorry about that.
So in my mind, like, the quick answer would be my basement where we play when I host games, just because it's familiar to me. And I figure, like, if I'm running a game for a new player, like, me having kind of access and like being it on my home turf is valuable. But really, I mean, I think it's, for me, it's if they want to host. If a new player wants to host a game, then that would be my default. If they don't, I would say, let me host it.
Yeah.
But my initial offer would be, if you want to have the home field advantage, like, we'll play. If you think you can, if you think and want to host a game, then we'll...
Dude, I'm so pissed you stole my answer. It's a good answer, man.
Well, but you're going to have a two-part answer, too. Yes, because your answer is pretty much mine, from your perspective.
Yeah.
Have you ever run a game for a new player at their place?
Yes.
Have they ever taken you up on that?
Yeah, it wasn't their first session, but I did. And it was my buddy who lives about an hour and a half away. But I knew they were into it. And they had a lot of dogs. Mm. That was one thing. They didn't want to be away from their dogs. But also, for the exact same reasons you said, I want them to feel comfortable. I think going into their space, because there's already so much like trepidation and anxiety going into a role-playing experience. If you've never done it before, you're like, I don't want to look stupid. I don't want to act goofy.
Yep.
If you start with the baseline that they're in their own comfort zone, it makes it way easier to go anywhere else.
I feel like it's them getting to set some of the terms. You know what I mean? Like, they're not GMing, but I guess almost kind of out of character.
Yeah,
really kind of they're the GM of the experience as people.
You give them agency of like their own situation. You know what I mean?
Right. But when Ivan's hosting a game in his kitchen buffet lair.
It's
still probably going to be a good experience for a brand new player.
I appreciate that. My second part answer to this, though, is look at me living in 2022, baby.
I love it.
Online and do it without cameras because it's the lowest expectation value you can have when starting this hobby.
Well, especially because with like some of the tools that there are available on some of the VTTs now, they don't have to manage a character sheet and have everything add up. They click a box, they check the box and the box is checked. Or you have the map and you can kind of get them into it by like they move their mini around the map and they have a little bit more of a sense of what's going on here. Because sometimes starting with battle maps instead of Theater of the Mind, like that's just a good, I think that for a lot of people, that's going to be a better baseline.
Totally.
You know, so I think that helps, that is a helpful option.
And it teaches them good habits. It really allows them to figure out verbal pacing. So it's like, it's not like a party where you're all having beers and that you can just talk over each other constantly. It kind of like teaches table etiquette, which is weird because you're not at a table, but those skills translate when you do go to an actual table. So it's like a really good primer on like just how to not piss everybody off and have a fun time in this hobby in general.
Yeah, that's wild. I would have definitely not thought of VTTs or online, you know, Skyping and Zooming and stuff as a place that might work for a first game. That's interesting.
So the next question here is, Steve, why will they like this game? I feel like we maybe answered this a little bit.
Well, I think that if I'm focusing on 5e, I would say that it's because it's simple and straightforward. But also I think that what 5e would do for a new player new to the concept of role-playing is that the PCs are, you know, they're superheroes, you know? So like they don't have to worry, like if it's worrisome to be like, oh, I don't want to make a misstep and just like my character dies. You know what I mean? Right. Like that's a game that tends to insulate people from that. And like, it's a pretty popular game. You can have a big party if you want that would like kind of shepherd not only the GM, but like you probably have some other players that are going to be able to shepherd some along through 5e. If they've, you know, if they're familiar with the concepts, it shouldn't be that much. And the question says, why will they like this game? And like, I assume that means that I'm GMing for them. And I think that they would like it because I'm like the great GM.
I mean, that's the obvious answer. Anybody answering this question, if your first answer is because I'm a fucking awesome GM, then you're not playing this game right.
It's a 1-1A situation for me. I mean, I'm going to have some sass and I'm going to say that, you know, me introducing them to the game is going to be part of why they love it.
I mean, that's true.
Because they will love my Cockney accent.
Oh, God, no.
All right, they will not.
No, nobody does.
All right, edit out my Cockney accent out of everything, please.
If you hear some static and a beep, you'll know that was where it was edited.
Yeah. The emergency broadcast system thing just tramples my great accents. That's what that's about.
The dial-up modem sound.
Hell yeah. Ding, ding, ding. Ivan, why will someone you introduce to role-playing like the game that you picked?
I can't really say anything that I hadn't already said. I think it comes down to being a confident GM, honestly. If it were me personally, it's because I've shepherded enough people through that I understand that hesitation when a new player joins, and I'm willing to accommodate that. But when it comes to Dread specifically, it's really just that it's so easy. It's not difficult to grasp at all.
It's almost like, that's a game, too, that kind of, to me, almost, like, reinforces that like failure is not a big deal. You know what I mean? Like totally. It's almost like it's like physically hilarious that the thing happened.
Yeah, exactly. And the way that it concludes is that everybody dies if you're playing it by the typical horror standard. So like it's not a fear, it's just an eventuality. Like you're gonna die and it's not a big deal. And like it really, it's like I think a lot of the hang up for new players is they come into a situation, they say, okay, well, D&D or RPGs, you can do whatever you want, right? Well, how does that work? There's it's just, all I know is that you can screw barmaids and roll dice to say how well you do. And it's just it they can't wrap their head around actually making the structured conversation that translates to an RPG.
If you invite someone to their first game and you know they're going to talk about screwing the barmaids.
Yeah, they're probably not going to. We're going to have a...
invite me to that session zero because I want to see your face when that happens.
I was going
to
say, we're probably going to have a pretty in-depth session zero about that specifically. But I mean, that's honestly, that's kind of like the one of the stigmas that goes along with this hobby is they think it's just a bunch of repressed nerds sitting around a table acting out their horrible fantasies because they can't do them in real life or don't have the cojones to do it in real life.
Okay, well, that hit that.
Well, I'm just saying,
very attacking.
This is what the outsiders think. So that tracks. They're like, oh, what do you want? You just want to go have weird fantasy romance with someone you don't know? That's weird. Like, that's what people think of this. So what I'm saying is introducing these outsiders that don't necessarily understand the hobby in its totality into something like this, it's Dread is a really great introductory game where you can be like, it's just a group conversation and they can go, oh, that's it. And they're like, yeah. And if we do it right, it's really fun. And they go, oh, damn, you're right. You know what I mean? Like it does. You don't have to overcomplicate things with a massive rule set and be like, here's 12 pages of math. Good luck.
It's something that creates buy-in right away is going to have tons of value.
Yeah, totally. All right. And this is question number 6, and I actually really, really like this one. This one says, how would you get more people playing RPGs?
I would restart our one-shot weekends.
Yeah.
Because I learned a lot playing and running those one-shots that I didn't think I would on account of the fact that I did not run or play a lot of one-shots before that.
Right.
And it really kind of got into our whole kind of dusty stack concept, mixing the table up a little bit. And it's to me, it's a place where you can kind of bring in a player or multiple players into, you know, that the most conducive situation.
Yeah, totally. For me, please allow me to step on my soapbox. But hey, it's my podcast. I'm allowed. Accessibility and representation. I think that we've made large strides as of late to reach a point of equal representation. I don't think we're there, and I don't even know if it'll happen like in my lifetime that we ever genuinely get there. And also, we've made great strides towards accessibility, making these games easier to get for people that have limited access for whatever reason. And I think that continued efforts on both of those fronts will make this hobby only continue to grow and thrive so that people can come into it feeling like they're already represented and they already have a baseline of understanding that they can latch onto and really get their best game out of it.
I think this is a bit of a closed circuit too, because as the hobby expands, you get more voices, you get more perspectives.
Yeah.
And an expanding thing is something that people are joining. So you have this kind of mixture of people who want to open it up. They want to literally answer this question. They want to get more people involved. And it just brings in more people who can tell stories from different perspectives. You know, generally, in my initial experience with the hobby, it was a lot of cis white dudes sitting around the table. And that's because generally that's who I knew that wanted to play these games. Different representations from all across all kinds of spectrums have become part of my games and made it better for me, for the players, for the game experience.
And I mean, we have a long way to go. I don't want to go way too deep on this because it's a topic that'll lead up the entire episode. And to be honest, we're both cishet white dudes, so like we're not qualified to speak on it that much. I just want to say that we're still living in a world that's pretty scary at the moment where people are complaining about black elves in Rings of Power. Mm-hmm. And they're still complaining about a black Jedi in Star Wars. And it's just like we're not there yet. So the best thing that people like us can do is just like keep our ears open and be advocates and be listeners and just like support when people are actually making these strides, because a rising tide raises all ships.
And
right,
if you've been on or interested in being on some shows to talk about this kind of stuff because you have an expertise or a perspective on this stuff, add us.
Yeah, please.
we want to bring other voices onto the show to represent perspectives that we don't have. Anything we can do to help spread that perspective is going to make the hobby better.
Yes, sir. All right, ma'am. System Sunday is what this one is called. And this is number 7. So this is the first week ended of the RPG Day 2022. And it says, describe a cool part of a system that you love.
I'm going to take you back.
Okay.
I'm going to take you to a flashback. Because Forged in the Dark's flashback system is such a cool part of what makes Forged in the Dark so good. Some friends and I played Blades in the Dark when it was not even completed yet, playing out of some of the beta documents, etc. That's my main exposure to Forged in the Dark. The system is so good and does so many cool things, and I could talk about failing forward and partial successes and great setting and 100 different things about it. But the thing that definitely resonates the most in Forged in the Dark is the flashback situation where you do not – have you ever sat through basically an entire session where you planned the thing you were going to do? And you didn't actually do the thing you were going to do. Well, have I got a sale for you, because it's 100% off planning. In Blades in the Dark, because basically you go through a very quick condensed checklist of what it is, the heist you're about to pull or the shenanigans you're about to get into. And then once you're in the shit, you can use the flashback mechanics to address a situation that you come upon. You are in a heist. There's a guard at a guard post. You get to potentially use a flashback because when you were originally casing the joint, you had a plan for how to address distracting that guard. You had a chance to set up a situation to make a distraction or whatever. Mm-hmm. Instead of having to spend 3 hours of real life coming up with a ironclad plan with 6 different deviations in case things went wrong, you can make a literal 5-minute plan and get to it.
Yep.
And it doesn't, and it comes with a cost. There's essentially like fatigue, you know, you take stress based on like what kind of ask, how much of an ask you're doing with the flashback. So it's not like it's just free and you just get to, you know, wind back time. So it's a balanced mechanic that makes sense in the context of real life, not wanting to sit there and say, we're going to watch this building for 60 days and figure out all the guard changes and every single blah, 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 we can get to it. And I love that about that mechanic.
I agree. It's honestly one of my favorite RPG mechanics ever. It's just so fucking good. And it solves so many problems in its simplicity. My answer for this would be metacurrencies, and to delve more specifically, I would say bennies. One thing I don't like about 5e, although I do love the idea of inspiration, if you've heard me talk about the way I run inspiration, it's very much expanded from how it's intended to be used in 5e, and a lot of that inspiration comes from Savage Worlds. Savage Worlds uses bennies not just as, hey, I want to do a cool thing, can I spend a benny on it? It's also used in various other productive ways, such as soaking damage, such as re-rolling dice, such as doing a whole bunch of stuff. I think that they basically gave you a trump card in that you can use the mechanics as written to the best of your ability, and sometimes situations just don't work out in your favor or you're not having the maximum amount of fun, and they basically gave you this little token or a poker chip or what have you as an out to say, you know what? I want to just have more fun with this situation, so I'm going to go ahead and throw it at this thing and make sure it works. And that's just what it represents as far as fun over rules, which I don't mean to go way too hard on the whole rule of cool conversation, but what it represents as fun over rules is really important to me. And I think anybody running metacurrencies in any system could really benefit just from taking a quick skim of Suede's Benny situation.
I like that it encourages the theatrical, and it encourages you to try it, you know, like the swinging from the chandeliers type stuff, or the kind of maybe using metacurrency to like buy the opportunity to fill in the blank. I want to try this thing that's a little above and beyond or a little risky, or to mitigate something, you know, going completely disastrous because you tried the thing, because you stepped on a twig and now a dragon ate you because you failed the stealth test. That's not fun.
Right, exactly.
And to have your fate decided by, like, some kind of bullshit that, like, a meta currency can help you kind of mitigate, like, to me, that keeps things moving and keeps things, like, more interesting.
Well, not only that, I mean, just resource management in general. Like, I have this theory, right, that literally everything is resource management. And bennies offer a tangible sense of resource management into Savage Worlds in that, like, if you're not incapacitated, but if you're shaken or something, you can use a Benny to, like, get out of that debilitating effect. So it makes you plan, like, how much of this do I want to spend on just doing cool shit? And how much do I want to spend on actual mechanical boons, et cetera, et cetera. It's a new layer of the game that isn't always top of mind, but you always have to pay some small amount of attention to. And I think that's really fun. Mm-hmm. All right. Question number 8. I feel like we kind of answered this one again already. This is who introduced you to RPGs?
Yeah, I wish I had a Shepherd, you know? Yeah. I mean, we really, like, we kind of just introduced ourselves because we just kind of barreled into a thing. I think that it maybe the one way I think it benefited me is that, like, we were, like, just kids who just didn't know any better. It was in a situation, it was in a time in my life where, like, there wasn't any geek shaming about it. Like, it was just like three of us, like me and my neighbor and my brother. And we, you know, like, we were just looking at these books. Like, it wasn't like maybe it would have been different if we were reading them in the school library or at, you know, at the lunch table in school where it's just kind of like, you know, like, I'm such a nerd. Oh no, I'm going to get a wedgie for, you know, like reading a Star Wars book, you know? But in, I think as much as I would have loved someone to literally introduce it to us, I think kind of stumbling onto it and being able to kind of engage it in our own kind of controlled geek environment probably had some value.
Yeah, this is okay. Listen, this is an obscure way to answer this question, but I want to give my dad credit. He didn't per se expose me to RPGs, but he facilitated us having a computer, which was my first exposure to RPGs. So when I was a kid, very young, my dad, by the way, let me preface this by saying he is fine now and healthy and he's moving on into his 70s, but he had a heart attack and a triple bypass and it freaked him out for a very good reason. And he started having that crisis that you have when you, you know, almost die about what he was going to leave behind and his legacy. And so he was a very early adopter during the days of 56K of computers and technology because he wanted to use it for word processing to write his memoirs. Mm-hmm. And so he got this computer. And of course, me being a little shit, I spent all my time on it playing fucking Cartoon Network Flash games and shit like that.
So your dad got a computer to write down his legacy.
Right.
And you got on message boards and pretended you were a wizard.
Yes, exactly. So, but because of that and his being encouraging, and I'm a software engineer now, so I owe this man a lot for having gotten a computer early on. But I think because of his willingness to early adopt technology and get a home computer, even though it was very expensive and paying a monthly bill for 56K was very expensive. Without that, I wouldn't have been exposed to these kinds of like far reaches of the internet because it was still pretty obscure at the time. And I never would have fallen into these message boards and these chat rooms and learned all about D&D and things like that. So I think he's probably the person that I would credit as introducing me.
Props.
Thanks, Dad. He does not listen to this. I can tell you that with certainty. So, all right, moving on to number 9. We are looking at what is the second RPG you bought? What the fuck is this question, man?
Well, so, you know, where you started and like how you got introduced is was the first game, right? The second game for me is without a doubt Shadowrun.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever even owned a copy of Shadowrun. So you had West End Star Wars and then you got Shadowrun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I don't know if I even ever owned Shadowrun. I think maybe the first game I ever got wasn't even like a real source book. It was probably just a supplement for something else because I was just playing. Like I said, it was in the days when I had no real mechanical knowledge whatsoever. I was just the guy that sat around in the corner. And I say the guy, I meant the kid sitting around in the corner trying to look cool by like role playing crappy NPCs.
So it wasn't Vampire the Masquerade?
That's what I'm thinking. My first might have been some dumb supplement for something World of Darkness. But honestly, I don't remember this shit at all. I think
definitely remember not owning, but like borrowing to read the OG, I think it was Palladium Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle source book.
Really?
But it was like a source book, and like it was for a game I didn't know. So I was reading it because like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is cool.
That's wild.
But like it was like reading a novel that had like some math you didn't understand going on behind it. Because it's this cool story, and like there's all this stuff that's you do understand, but at the same time, and like there's like charts for stuff you don't. It doesn't make any sense.
That's what I'm saying. I don't even remember what the first game I really got was, because I've lot of books, but I would venture a guess to say that the second thing that I bought that I probably really dove into was 3.5 in some form or another, because I didn't really get into like table gaming like that until 3.5.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's how I remember it too, is that like we read these kind of worn TSR books, right. But I didn't buy any of them.
Yeah, I never, like,
because we also didn't like play it. We kind of just read it, and whoever had it, like, we kind of just read it, but it definitely wasn't a purchase. And Shadowrun to me also too was like, that was like me making a commitment to a game that we definitely liked, was like, I'm going to buy this cool rule book because like I'm in, like, I'm playing this.
Right.
You know, it was kind of, that's a way to commit to something, is to be like, we do it now more. Yeah, yeah. It's like when we're getting into a game, like one of the ways that you say like, I'm in on the invitation to play this game is like, I'm going to pick up the core rulebook and like, I'm going to physically have it.
Well, also like we're adults and like have property now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like when you start playing when you're a kid, it's first off really hard to remember because books get passed around like, I don't know what.
I honestly think that that's part of this question too, is like the younger you are when you're in the era of like answering this question, I think it's like more nebulous and like more less likely that like you really did purchase something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if you start playing when you have disposable income, like your answer is so much different.
Yeah. And it's much easier, I feel like.
Yeah. Wait, it's possible.
I can't even. I honestly, my memory's shot too. For listeners of the show, I have something called inference memory. And it's great because I can play the same video games and watch the same movies like 50 times and not have a problem with it. But what I do is I'm so scatterbrained all the time, and I think it's part of my ADD, that I'll watch something. I won't remember like any specifics or details, but I'll pick out one or two little things from it, and I'll be like, Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time is a good game because A, B, and C. And then I'll store that as an inference about it in my memory and then just fucking forget the rest. And this happens a lot with gaming as well, that like if I don't play a game for like a year, I'll have to completely restart and do a refresh on the rules. But like, I don't even remember every book I've read. Like I couldn't name like probably half of them. It's just, it's like a time in my life, and then I move on to the next thing. You know what I mean?
I wish I could excuse it as a memory issue. I think it's just that I read a bunch of books when I was much younger. And that's just how memory works. Yeah. Like I was thinking the other day about like, I was like, I have a lot of books. I like owning books that I've read.
Yeah, right.
And I was just like, man, there's a lot of books on my bookshelf that I could just go back and read and be like getting a brand new book. Yeah. And that's fine.
It's a blessing and a curse in many ways. Oh, man. So moving on from that, the next question is, when did you / will you start game mastering?
The first game that I ever participated in was the first game that I GM'd. I ran Star Wars West End games for my younger brother, who I probably played more than one PC, which is wild to think about. Like, we started basically with a duet game and like played more than one character just because like the concept of solo gaming like didn't exist at the time.
Yeah.
But I definitely, you know, we just dug into the original book, and there's hooks and I probably some adventures in there. And just also they had published material because we found the game several years after it started. So that we weren't like, oh, you know, this brand new game is what we've stumbled upon. So there was material. And it's probably where I get my interest in running, you know, prepared stuff, is that like I was able to GM right out of the chute because of something like that. So I definitely smashed into some walls and made a ton of mistakes and like figured out a lot on the go. So I definitely appreciate much younger Dan for just letting us go wild and try to figure things out and not really care and really just have fun with the story of bumping around.
Thanks, Dan.
Boy.
Yeah, I would say 3.5 again. I probably got a turn for like a one shot here and there when I was younger. But honestly, seriously GMing, probably like not even until like after high school. So I would say like literally late teens or early 20s when I actually started GMing for real. Just because it was something that I wanted to find people to do it with instead of just a thing that you did every once in a while.
And you're definitely more of a forever GM than me.
Yeah. So, I mean, once I did it, I almost never wanted to play anymore. And I, you know, I've had lulls. I've had breaks where I literally didn't do it for a couple of years, or I would go back to it and then I would do it nothing but that for a very long time. But, you know, you take it as you can get it. But at this point, yeah, I'm just like, if I can GM, I'll just always choose that.
And the funny part is for part two of this episode, a lot of the questions in the back half are about your current characters, which means you are going to do, you have actual answers for these. And I have the hypothetical like Deadlands characters that I'm considering. Yeah. So stay tuned for a complete swerve in part two of this episode.
Absolutely. All right, so moving on to question 11 here. It says, if you could live in a game setting, where would it be, man?
You know my answer for this. It's not Star Wars.
Really?
Professor Tolkien.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's obvious.
First edition One Ring, because it's Middle Earth, and that's just dope. And it is also set in a less dangerous time frame, because the Battle of the Five Armies in the Hobbit story is a few years past.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a couple generations before the War of the Ring starts. So we get to hang out in like a little safer time frame in a pastoral land.
Yeah, and you can go visit Tom Bombadil.
There's not, hey diddly, oh, there's less orcs and more fun. So
that's pretty dope.
I get to live in Middle Earth and not during a war, which is like pretty optimal.
I would say of all the times to live in in Tolkien's universe, that's the time.
Yep. I mean, the whole point of like this game in this setting is that they wanted to find, and this is in the first and second edition, is that like there's so many years of Middle Earth where they're not telling a story where you can tell yours, but like it wasn't interesting enough to be the crux of one of his stories. So hopefully it's like a little more low key.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm hoping.
My answer is cheating. It's like such a cheat, and I almost feel bad for saying it, but because there is an RPG about Star Trek, I'm gonna say Star Trek.
Also because you won't play it, so you get to live in it, and I don't have to be involved in the game at all.
Yeah, no, Star Trek is fun. The best way that I've described Star Wars versus Star Trek is that Star Wars is a dystopia, Star Trek is utopia. Mm-hmm. We're past resource wars in Star Trek. We're just getting to the core of human exploration in Star Trek. Yeah, there's conflict out in space. There's diplomatic issues. But human civilization has at this point reached a utopian apogee. And that just sounds like a really pleasant place to live. And if I could do anything, if I could just be born into any time, it would just be a starship captain romping around, exploring, trying my absolute best to make positive and lasting relations with otherwise disparate species and peoples, man.
Just be careful with Ivan, because he has accessibility to a bunch of red shirts based on the job he wants in the Star Trek universe. Just if Ivan recruits you to live in Star Trek with him, just be aware of the wardrobe situation.
It's actually that I'm just a high functioning sociopath, and I just look forward to sending all these poor red shirts to their dens.
Whole ass starship, and I'll beam you where I want. Oh no.
Oh god. Yeah, so anyway, I know that's kind of a lame answer. I cheated just because I'm a Star Trek junkie, but
that's
true.
Not cheating at all.
They have a game.
One of the things I love about roleplaying is that a lot of times you get to pick a setting either that exists or that you get to create together that you all are in on. You know what I mean? Like, that's one of the reasons why I'm like literally shocked that we still have not played a Conan game.
Yeah.
Is because like both of us are so down for the setting
mm-hmm.
and the lore that it still remains on our dusty stack is like practically a war crime.
If I can be honest, and I don't want to throw shade at Modiphius, but the 2D20 system from the reviews that I've read has prevented me from diving into it. It doesn't look that fun to me.
But there is the original Mongoose game was laid over top of D&D.
That's very, very true. Maybe we should do the older edition. Mm. Yeah, I've heard mixed reviews about it, and I am worried. I have this thing where if I'm too precious about something, like a beloved IP, I almost don't want to play in the system because I'm afraid of having a bad experience with it. Mm-hmm. And I don't want it to tarnish the things that I love about it. So like Conan is kind of there for me. Star Trek is kind of there for me. Even Blade Runner a little bit. I don't know, man. I know that's a stupid way to behave, but that's just
another argument for the one shot.
Yeah.
We just run the introduction in the back of the Modiphius book, And if it doesn't do it for us, then we tried it. And if it does, then it launches us into the Conanosphere.
The Conan. Wow. I love that. The Conanosphere. Could we please use that forever?
Also, it's Conan Cannon.
Conan Cannon. Yeah, thank you. You did it before I did by a split second, dude. All right. Number 12 here. Moving on. The question is, why did you start RPGing?
I mean, it's really simple. A few of us that I hung out with all the time who love Star Wars found a game where we could literally tell our own version of adventures in Star Wars.
I feel like I'm using this a little bit as a therapy session, so I apologize that I'm dumping all my emotional baggage on you people. But I mean, the truth is, I have just always been a deeply lonely, depressive nerd since childhood. So it's like, I mean, if I'm being honest, I was looking for something to fulfill gaps that I, you know, had in friendships or things that I, you know, a lack of interaction with other human beings. So this ticked a lot of boxes for me.
If you're a kid and you like sports,
yeah,
there's all kinds of sports you can sign up
right,
for.
Right.
But back in the day, if you were a kid and you wanted to do stuff that wasn't sports, there was less stuff to sign up for, man.
Lots of less stuff. Like, yeah.
So now, yeah, like, you just tweet that you want to play X game. And there's VTTs, and you are playing.
That's facts, man.
And back in the day, man, none of that was the case. And also, like nerd culture was not a fucking thing.
True. And it's not only that, but, like, it's real. We lived in a time where stimulating yourself intellectually was, like, another layer on top of that. It was really hard. Like, you could always find something to do by yourself. If you were alone a lot, you could go out and throw sticks at shit or go turn a stick that you found in the yard into a gun. A lot of stuff with sticks, actually. Anyway,
you needed Legos.
Turn a stick into a hockey stick, turn a stick into a gun.
Legos as a child, I think.
Yeah, but like, so my parents, I've said this before, were traveling puppeteers, but they were out of the house a lot. And it was either me and my sisters, or I was kind of floating around to other people's houses, and I was doing a lot of stuff that was very, like, kind of isolative. And so this was something that not only was something I could kind of get into by myself or just do with an internet connection, get on and role play with other people that I'd never met and only deal with their characters, but it was also something that stimulated me intellectually, right? So it wasn't just like a mindless task, like sitting around playing Jax by myself. It was something that actually kept my brain working. And as kind of like a heady child who is always like kind of contemplative and like introverted, that was like very much like up my alley. So that's why I did it. I think it's like I said, like, I think a lot, like any hobby, right? You're trying to escape.
I think it's kind of in the example of like the idea that like reading a book is very enjoyable to me, but like reading a choose your own adventure book is like even more engaging. Like, books don't give you player agency.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So to have something where you get something, like, no one is letting a middle school age kid direct a movie.
Yes.
I don't care how awesome iPhones are, man. Like, a sixth grader is just not getting directed in a movie.
That's just true facts, you know? Man.
And this is the closest you're going to get.
Yeah. Moving on to the next question, though, and past my childhood trauma.
Maybe.
Sorry. How would you change the way you started RPGing?
Well, I would like less childhood trauma.
Yes, that's true. That's probably the wisest answer.
I wish that I had a Shepherd. I wish I got to play with experienced GMs more back in the day, because my entire first few years was everyone learning at the exact same pace.
Yeah, yeah. And I bet that definitely slowed it down.
For sure.
Yeah.
And like, you just don't have any concept that people have an understanding for. There's no social contract yet. Because, like, you don't know
right
what it would be.
Right.
So it's basically like we spent the first few years like just play testing what role playing even was. So there's no, like, when you shepherd someone now, you get to introduce them to kind of standards and practices and expectations.
Yeah.
And we didn't know what, from the crunch to the fluff, we didn't know what any of it was supposed to be, or mm-hmm. if we were doing it quote unquote right. You know, I mean, we could have played for 5 years and then someone be like, you know, there's initiative.
Right.
You don't just get to yell. Whoever yells first goes, mm-hmm. you know, like mm-hmm. there's a function for that. And we'd be like, well, we've fought 100 dragons wrong.
Yeah.
Over the years. So sorry, I guess. Right. Is maybe more people died or maybe less people died. I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't change much, man. I guess I just don't really kind of like live on that vibe. I feel like the things that I did and the way I started gaming, it led to like the enjoyment that I have now. I feel like most things that I do are trial by fire. I don't really like being told what to do because I'm stubborn. So directions for me are painful. So I always just kind of like jump in and immerse myself. And I feel like that was very much my experience with RPGs. So I don't think I would change anything specifically. I think I would probably spend fewer years maybe just like being like the little kid that was just a tag along because that wasn't great. But outside of that, I mean, whatever, man. One cool thing they don't tell you about getting old is that you have all these kind of like old war stories where you're like, well, I was on the internet doing forum role playing before anybody even knew what Dungeons and Dragons was, like shit like that. So you can say stuff like that. And it brings a unique perspective to, especially to like modern gamers that may have just started in the past few years that don't necessarily have that experience. So, I mean, I'm happy for how it played out in my experience. I wouldn't change too much about my roots.
14 is a pass because we're going to roll a D8 plus one and tag that many friends and suggest a new RPG to try. That's where we're going to tag everyone on social media and you're going to tell us or we're going to tell you.
I sure hope so. And that'll come on August 14th, if I had to guess.
Yep. And so we get two more. So now I'm going to say 15 and 16. And we're going to pause it.
Yes, sir.
Cool. All right. So 15, who would you like to game master for you?
This is my favorite question on this list. I love this question so much.
Don't and you I'm, dare say God.
No. I've got way too many answers, but God isn't one of them. Okay, so my first answer is a very, very obvious one, and I would like to play in a Forgotten Realms setting GM'd by Ed Greenwood. He's a personal hero of mine. He created the Forgotten Realms. I don't think that you could possibly do anything cooler than get game mastered in a setting from the person that created it, especially considering it's like so widely received and so lauded and so loved. So if Ed Greenwood, man, if you want to jump down and GM a game for me, I'll pay you any amount of money. I'll probably have to steal most of it, but let's go.
Just gold pieces. In-game currency, offer a bunch of bennies.
Before I continue, do you have more than one?
You want me to give you mine and then we'll jump back?
Yeah. Why don't you give me yours and then we'll talk about it.
All right. Craig, I'm not pandering to you, but author Joe Abercrombie needs a GM for me.
And his brother Fitch?
Because I said I had one.
Sorry.
I said I had one. You trying to lure me into a second one? If I could think of a Fitch like fast enough to...
I wish.
So Joe Abercrombie is a British author. He is most famous for the First Law trilogy, which is an absolutely brutal, low magic-ish fantasy setting. And the books are amazing and feel very much like a role-playing game. Super great characters. And he has a bunch of associated short stories. He also wrote the Shattered Seas trilogy, which I have not read yet. I stress I'm getting to there. But like he definitely writes some great characters and really like brings it as far as like his books are very grimdark.
Yeah.
So I love his take on fantasy settings and his attention to detail and the fact that I think that he would not actively try to kill characters, but if your character died, you just would be okay with it. And that's why I want Abercrombie to GM for us.
Yeah, that's a pretty damn good one, man. Mine is also about an author, my second one that I'm obsessed with. I would really like to get GM'd by Truman Capote. Truman Capote.
All right.
Well, okay, so listen, here's Truman Capote. I'm not going to tell you the life story.
William S. Burroughs.
Yeah, look him up on Wikipedia. But Truman Capote was a genius, like an absolute genius. I'm not a huge proponent of the IQ score because I think that it judges based on, I guess, unfair standards.
And it's racist.
Yeah, it's absolutely totally racist. But that being said, he was a rural kid in, I want to say, Alabama, who was found by this organization that was looking for the best and brightest in the United States. He had all sorts of tests run on him when he was a kid, but he took his initial IQ test, and there's conflicting reports. I think Truman Capote is quoted as saying at one time he had an IQ score of 185, but it's also apparently been recorded that he had an IQ score of 215. Regardless of what it is, those are completely astronomical numbers.
That's it, 215.
Yeah. those are like numbers that like he should look like, I don't even like those Talosians, I think they're called from the first Star Trek episode with the giant fleshy brains that pulsate in their heads.
Would it rock your world if I corrected you and I was right? I think what you're thinking of is the blah, blah, blah from Star Trek. And you're like, fuck, you're right. Wouldn't that be great? Holy cow,
so,
how did you know that?
Huge IQ score. He also has experience doing like journalistic style literature with In Cold Blood. He was a playwright, so he knows how to tell a story. Breakfast at Tiffany's. He is a fantastic storyteller who's, by all definitions of the term, an absolute genius. And he was just wildly eccentric and fun to be around. And he loved doing things like name dropping. And he loved just like the glamorous lifestyle. And I mean, not only that, he was gay in a time that it was very, very, very difficult to be gay.
More difficult.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not difficult today. It absolutely is. But it was. I would argue that it was more difficult in Truman Capote's time. So I think also he would bring a ton of unique perspective and social commentary that would still be totally socially relevant now. I think that would be an incredibly fun GMing experience.
I also heard that he was a dice goblin and counted rolls on the floor.
Yeah.
So I may be making that up, but that's the new rumor.
That's my last serious one. The only other one that I had is I would really love to play like tabletop Warhammer with Alexander the Great.
Want to hear my joke one?
Yeah, please.
Matt Mercer.
I feel like that's going to be everybody's answer.
That is my joke answer.
I feel like if you put this online, at least 70% of people are just going to say Matt Mercer or that guy from Dimension 20, Brendan.
Okay. I just came up with one. Ready for this? Taika Waititi.
That would be great, too. GM Talk about game. A good storyteller.
GM my game.
Yeah, please. Please. I feel like that would be a really great romp, too. That would be a game that's like everybody is acting totally foolishly, but just having a really good time.
And then at the end, you get like a crazy mind blown like end to it. Yeah. Our snitch tags are going to, for this episode, are going to be amazing.
Oh, my God.
The people we are going to tag is going to get real
hashtag
weird.
Truman Capote.
Hashtag Hunter S. Thompson. Yeah,
I would hate to be GM by Hunter S. Thompson. That man is just, he was so miserable all the fucking time.
He's like, you know what? I love Dread.
Talk about bringing down the table. I know, like, my God.
Well, but have you ever been GM by someone who is on like all the acid?
Nope. That's also very true. Fear and loathing in Faerun, man.
Should I tell the PCs about the bats?
I'm sorry, but that's the episode subtitle right now. It's going to be Fear and Loathing in Faerun. Mm. Oh, dear God. All right, man, that does it for me. I really want to play a tabletop war game with Alexander the Great, though. That'd be fantastic.
I'm in. We got to do some Jurassic Park level shit of like some DNA stuff so we can make it, so we can bring back Alexander the Great. But just for this, just for the role-playing game, and then we ear-hole them.
That's how you get dinosaurs.
We spent all this time thinking who should do it, and GM for us, but not why. Not whether we should.
Yeah.
That's the Jurassic Park quote, right?
It's chaos
we
theory,
kept
man.
Thinking, could we? But we never thought, should we?
Oh, God. All right, this is the final question for the day before we launch you into the socials. Steve will tell you how to get a hold of us. But before that, I feel like this could be a long answer, but mine is very simple. Mm-hmm. Number 16, what would be your perfect game?
Cabin in the woods with a small group of friends playing a fairly long campaign in a fun setting we all like, with a rule set that reinforces theme and tone.
Yeah, and I'm going to take a wholly cop-out answer and just say the game where everybody's having fun. I think that speaks to our mission statement, kind of this podcast, that setting don't matter for shit. And neither does the lore, and neither does the story. None of it matters if you're not having a good time. And whatever path that takes down whatever road, as long as you're having fun with the people you care about and building memorable experiences, then do that thing.
Okay, but I got one follow-up question.
Yeah.
What are you cooking for the perfect game?
What am I cooking? Ooh, yeah.
What's on the menu for the perfect game?
Oh, shit. I really like my mac and cheese. I call it long rest mac and cheese or campfire mac and cheese because I make a smoky Gouda mac and cheese with beer braised bratwursts and roasted red peppers. It's three cheese, so it's got smoked Gouda, Gruyere, and sharp cheddar. And don't tell anybody, but I add a little bit of American cheese just so it prevents the sauce from breaking.
May I bring a loaf of Italian bread?
Yes, please. That would be dope. So I'm big in my mac and cheese. I do a lot of Italian bakes just because they're very easy to accommodate a lot of people. But I think the mac and cheese, because also you eat it and you get so full that you don't want to get up out of your seat. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's great for gaming.
It has to be, whatever it is, it has to be comfort food.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's my big one. But yeah, man, I mean, I'm very much with you. I think the medium is meaningless unless everybody's just having a good time. So it could be any game.
Yeah,
any,
neither of us said rules. Literally like a specific game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I will tell you this. I hate running groups larger than like three people now. So mine would also probably be a small group.
Oh, yeah. I got bad news for you about Twilight 2000. I'm going down to two.
Oh, no.
All right. Check us out at iCastSpells.com. Get with us on Twitter at @passive_podcast and email us at passiveaggropod@protonmail.com. We're on Facebook where we post to say we dropped a new episode. And if you're not on the other socials, you can interact with us there. Give us a little thumbs up. We're on all the podcatchers, especially the ones that let you give us 5-star ratings and write reviews so that more people know we exist.
Yes, please. That would be fantastic. And like we said at the beginning of this episode, really, this is to inspire a conversation between all of you as well. So if you heard anything on today's episode that you found interesting or that you had an interesting anecdote or story for or something that you think you could offer your perspective on, then please send it our way because that's what this is for. And we'd love to hear it. So
if you participate in this hashtag, tag us.
Yeah, please add us in your participation hashtags. That would be dope.
Yep.
All right. So I just want to say thank you so much for spending this time with us again this week. You have been listening to Passive Aggressive Perception. My name is Ivan. This is Steve. And we hope that your next session is the most hashtagable one yet.
Hashtag it will be.
Hashtag RPG a day 2020, baby. Get on it.
I feel like hashtag 2022.
Oh, did I say 2020? Well, that's staying in.
You know what? Both. Do them both.
Fuck it, we'll do it live.